Hello, everybody. This is Buck with TheRubberChickensBlog.com. Thank you for joining me for another episode of Buckshots. We are going through every South Carolina football season since 1987. We are up to the 2002 season. And I'm going to do something a little different. I'm actually going to combine 2002 and 2003 into one broadcast here because they are virtually identical seasons. And I'm sure people will argue with me that there are moments in each one that are that distinguish them from each other. But they're both 5-7 seasons, and I just find it difficult to do two separate recordings for these two seasons. And, you know, I know some of you are going to feel shorted. You feel like I am, robbing you of an episode of Buckshots. And I can understand that. I know you look forward to these, and I know you get excited to hear these, and I promise I will figure out a way to make it up to you. But in the meantime, we're going to go ahead and cover two seasons here. So we're coming off a 2001 season in which we're 9-3, second best record in South Carolina history. Back-to-back Outback Bowl wins over Ohio State. We're riding high, feeling good about Lou Holtz. We're, you know, starting to get some recruits that maybe we wouldn't have gotten before. And the program feels like it's on pretty solid footing. So we head into 2002. We have lost Phil Petty, but we feel very comfortable with Corey Jenkins coming in as a starting quarterback. And Jenkins was always more of a runner than a thrower, as much as everyone tried to convince us that he had a cannon for an arm, which he did. It was just his cannon just launched some real stray cannonballs every now and then. So Corey Jenkins enters as our starting quarterback. Another guy, the Thrilla from Camilla, Georgia, Dondrell Pinkins, also arrives on campus and gets some playing time in the 2002 season as well. So I'm just going to run through these kind of quickly. I'm going to stop on a couple of games. There's one game in particular that does distinguish these two seasons and a game that I believe changes the course of South Carolina football history. But we'll get to that at the very end. So let's start with 2002. We opened with New Mexico State, beat those guys 34-24. Same team we beat to stop our 21-game losing streak a couple of years prior. The next week we go to Virginia. So we're at Virginia, ACC team. It's Virginia. We're South Carolina. We're feeling kind of like we ought to be able to walk in there and win that game. And it was a pretty tight game. I think Matthew Thomas had a kickoff return for a touchdown. I also think he fumbled a kickoff return that was returned for a touchdown by Virginia. That game got away from us big time in the second half, and Virginia went on to beat us 34-21. So we're 1-1, really disappointing loss, and we got Georgia coming in the following week. And a David Pollack, David Green Georgia team. A little trivia note, those guys were roommates. Did you know that? If you never watched CBS or never heard Vern Lundquist, you may not know that. But Vern mentioned that multiple times during every Georgia broadcast that they did. So Pollack and Green come to town. Big time defensive battle. It goes all the way down to the fourth quarter. Georgia had us backed up deep in our own territory. It was 3-0. I think it was late third or early fourth. It may have even been early fourth. It was a nasty day. The game had actually been halted for lightning for a little while at one point. So we're backed up. We'll say it's early in the fourth quarter. Corey Jenkins rolls out to his right. David Pollack busts through the line. Jenkins is in his own end zone. And Pollack leaps, and you've probably all seen the play, just picks Jenkins clean, falls down with the ball in the end zone for a touchdown. And that's where my season tickets used to be. That play was right in front of me. And I knew as soon as he hit the ground and he had the ball in his hands, there was no way it was anything but a touchdown. It wasn't really an interception because he didn't throw the ball, and it wasn't really a fumble because he didn't fumble the ball, but the fact is Pollack had the ball when he hit the ground in the end zone, so it was a touchdown for Georgia. And the crowd was just going crazy. They thought we got robbed. And I told everybody around me, I said, I don't see how it could be anything but a touchdown. And sure enough, it's one of the great plays in Georgia history. David Pollack went on to become a legend at Georgia. But at this particular moment, it put them up 10-0. We showed some resilience. We drove down, scored a touchdown to make it 10-7. Georgia kicks a field goal. It's 13-7. And we put together a pretty good-looking drive, had a big fourth-down conversion to Ryan Brewer. It was the Ryan Brewer show most of the day catching the football. Get down inside the 5 with about 30 seconds left, called a timeout, and came out and ran the option to Andrew Pinnock, who was a big, big fullback slash running back for us at the time. Jenkins takes a shotgun snap, runs towards the line of scrimmage. The defensive end is crashing down on him, so he pitches the ball to Pinnock, hits Pinnock square in the hands, and he fumbles, and Georgia recovers. They run out the clock to win 13-7. Total lost opportunity. Had a chance to win over Georgia for the third consecutive years and just really blew it there at the end. There's always a lot of dispute as to whether Pinnock would have scored on that play or not. There are a lot of people that said he could have walked in for a touchdown, and there were others that said there were defenders there waiting for him. And I rewatched the end of that game last night, and I used to be of the opinion that he would have scored, but after watching the replays last night, there were a couple of defenders. Ryan Brewer was beat on his block, and whoever the receiver was on the outside was beat on his block, so I'm not sure that Pinnock would have scored, but we still would have had another down or maybe two to try to score. So disappointing loss to Georgia there. Gonna just run through a few games. We won 4 straight over Temple, Vandy, Mississippi State, Kentucky, and then we lost to LSU at their place 38-14. And then we came back home to face Tennessee and Arkansas, and the offense just kind of fell apart for a couple of weeks. We scored 10 points against Tennessee, lost to them 18-10. I remember that was the first time I ever sat in the upper deck in the end zone for the first time, and that was just a brutal game. We couldn't get anything going. Lose to those guys, and then the following week I've got an Arkansas buddy, and this was the first time that I ever brought him to Columbia, and we had a couple of other friends. One guy is a Wisconsin fan, one guy is a Auburn fan, and I said, and they had weeks off or something, so the four of us road trip to Columbia. I was just bragging on Williams-Brice and Columbia and the atmosphere and what a great game it was going to be. And it might be the most boring South Carolina game I've ever been to. We got shut out 23-0 by Arkansas. And I just apologize to those guys for the 4-hour ride back home. And it was rough. That was a rough one to sit through. Close out the season by losing 28-7 to Florida and 27-20 to Clemson. And I just don't recall anything about that game. I don't remember Corey Jenkins. It was that, you know what, now that I'm thinking about it, maybe by that point Corey Jenkins had moved to defensive back. That's right. They'd moved him to either DB or linebacker. So obviously as I'm talking to you, some of these memories are coming back to me. So yeah, and he was humiliated by Charlie Whitehurst on a touchdown run, got faked out of his shoes. So I felt kind of bad for Corey Jenkins there at the end. He was a loyal Gamecock, a guy who had a difficult story, came in, had some really good moments for us, but in the end was playing out of position. I think he played, you know, a year or two. He survived in the NFL as a linebacker, and you know, hopefully he's doing well now. He was duped out of a lot of money when he first signed a baseball contract coming out of high school, but Corey Jenkins was a fine Gamecock. So let's move on to 2003. The big news coming into 2003 was we had gained a commitment from Demetrius Summers of Lexington High School, who was one of the most decorated high school running backs in the history of the state. He was either the 1, 2, or 3 ranked running back in the country coming out of high school. Was a big get for Lou Holtz. So we had Derek Watson a couple years earlier, who was very highly rated, and now Demetrius Summers, and everyone was really, really excited about getting number 31 on the field. And an interesting thing happened. We opened the season against Louisiana Lafayette, and I think Dacus Turman might have been the number one quarterback coming out of the fall. And so on the first offensive play of the game, instead of Dacus Turman, Demetrius Summers lined up in the backfield and took the handoff and maybe got about a 2-yard gain. So immediately everybody's looking at each other like recruiting promise. That was the first time I can ever recall seeing one of those. Lou Holtz told Demetrius Summers, if you come to South Carolina in your first game, you're going to get the first carry. And, you know, he kept to his promise. And he got the first carry. And we didn't get much else. We beat Louisiana Lafayette 14-7. I think we were feeling kind of bummed at this point after ending the 2002 season 5-7 and then open up against Louisiana Lafayette and only beat them 14-7. But things would turn around the following week against Virginia as they came to town. And we whipped those guys pretty good. We had the longest play in South Carolina history. Dondrell Pinkins hit Troy Williamson on a 99-yard touchdown, which you can see on YouTube. We had Dondrell Pinkins played pretty well, ran the ball well, threw the ball okay. But we pulled away from Virginia late, beat them 31-7. I think we were feeling pretty good as we headed to Athens the following week. As we left Athens the following week, we did not feel quite as good. They beat us 31-7, and that was a day that wasn't long after we had moved into the home that we're in now. And I remember I was painting my bedroom watching that game, and about the third quarter, I just couldn't take it anymore. I just was just so frustrated. I turned it off, and about every 10 minutes, I'd turn it back on to see if anything had happened, and it never did. We just got hammered in that game by the Bulldogs. Come back home, beat Alabama Birmingham 42-10. So we're still 3-1, still feeling okay, I guess. And then we go to Tennessee and took the Tennessee. I think Tennessee, check this out real quick. I think they were number 8 in the country at the time. Yeah, they were number 8. Took them to overtime, the first overtime in South Carolina history. We get the ball first, kicked a field goal. They get the ball second, scored a touchdown, beat us 23-20. Just a real crushing loss to a really good Tennessee team. Come back and beat Kentucky at home, 27-21. Just not memorable at all. So we come back and play LSU at home. And the G-Man and T-Bone and I... don't know if we've talked about this very much on podcasts or anything, but we're fishermen, and we do at least 2 fishing trips every year, and we'll typically bass fish in the spring and go down to the coast and fish for redfish and trout in the fall. So we decided to incorporate football into this. We had been doing it over, you know, bye weeks or away games, so football really wouldn't get in the way. So we said, you know what, let's go to the game on Saturday and then head straight down to the beach after that, and we'll fish on like Sunday and Monday, come back Tuesday, and just kind of flip the weekend over. That was such a mistake. Louisiana State beat us like a drum, beat us 33-7 and just ran all over us. It wasn't even close and put us in such a foul mood as we were down at Fripp Island for those few days, and we've never done that again. We've always tried to either go on a bye week or an away game that we knew we could watch on TV, but man, that was just a miserable, miserable weekend. Come back and beat Vanderbilt 35-24 at home, and then a really exciting game at Ole Miss. And we hadn't played at Ole Miss by this time a lot. I'm not sure how many games we had played in Oxford. But Ole Miss was dropping the hammer on us. They were beating us 43-21, I think it was, heading into the fourth quarter. And we scored 19 points, drew within 43-40. We had another long touchdown, a 98-yard touchdown from Dondrell Pinkins to Matthew Thomas. So a 99-yard touchdown and a 98-yard touchdown in the same year. Pretty impressive. I'm looking up Pinkins' stats. He was 14 out of 32 for 298 yards and 4 touchdowns on the day. So he had a good day, but it turned out to be a bad day for the Gamecocks altogether as they beat us. Mississippi beat us 43-40. Continue the losing streak to Arkansas. They beat us 28-6 at Arkansas the following week. And then we came home to play Florida. Florida just didn't have as good a team as they had in past years. And they came in, they were ranked right around number 15. And they beat us 24-22. And we had a 16-14 lead on them going into the fourth quarter and just couldn't hold on to it. They scored some points there and beat us 24-22. Sorry, I got a little confused. I'm looking at the media guide. The media guide says Florida scored 7 points in the second quarter, 7 in the third, and 19 in the fourth. And that does not equal 24 points. So that's why I got a little confused there. So regardless, they did beat us 24-22. And Chavez Donnings had a 73-yard punt return for a touchdown in that game. So that 2003 punt return was the last punt return for touchdown we had until Ace Sanders. A little more trivia for you.
So after the loss to Florida, that set us up for our annual showdown with the Clemson Tigers. And I've got to say, nothing about our season or their season was necessarily indicative of what would happen on that November night in Columbia. We've been through the South Carolina season. Clemson was 7-4, I believe it was, coming into that game. They had lost season opener to Georgia, just a humiliating 30-0 loss. They'd lost a game to Maryland, to NC State, and then earlier in November had just been embarrassed by Wake Forest, 45-17. So you got to think, here comes a 7-4 Clemson team playing a, 5-6 at the time, South Carolina team, fairly evenly matched. Clemson came out and scored early and often and put the worst beating on us in the history of the rivalry, 63-17. I was at that game, and it was almost like we were playing without a defense. Receivers were running wide open for Charlie Whitehurst, and the Clemson fans, my season tickets were always beside the visiting fans section, so I had to sit by these Clemson fans for about half. Maybe I left after halftime. I'd lived in Atlanta at the time, and I was with my college roommate who lived in North Augusta. And I think we left probably shortly after halftime. And we got back to North Augusta to his house in time to catch the end of the game. And it was 63-17. And I had this weird calm about the whole thing. And T-Bone tells a totally different story. He actually took a van down to Columbia with a bunch of Clemson fans. So it was really, really miserable. And I have definitely been more miserable after games than I was after this just humiliating, embarrassing defeat. And we're sitting there and we're watching the end of the South Carolina Clemson game, and I'm watching Savelle Newton run around, throw the ball, pick up some yards, and for some reason I just pulled this silver lining out. It's like, hey, you know, that's Savelle Newton. He could be our quarterback someday. He might be pretty good. And it was like I realized at that time, even though we would hear about this game for years and years, I was like, Clemson is not 63-17 better than us. They're just not. And they weren't. And if we're all being honest with each other, West Virginia was not 70-33 better than Clemson. Those were two fairly evenly matched teams. It's just on the night that we got beat 63-17, and on the night that West Virginia beat Clemson 70-33, things just got out of hand. It was just a total anomaly. Things happened that weren't supposed to happen, and one team blew the other team out. Now, that didn't make it any less fun for us to make fun of Clemson when they lost to West Virginia. As a matter of fact, I think we need to start talking about that again. It's been a while since we've talked about 70-33. But at the time, you know, I don't think we realized the impact that that loss would have on us heading into 2004 and beyond. Holtz changed his coaching staff. We came out the following year in completely different uniforms. It was like we wanted to just wash every stinking memory of that game and of the 2003 season away. And we couldn't really do it. We had a hard time doing it. But that was the game that led to Lou Holtz's departure and Steve Spurrier coming to South Carolina, which we know how that has turned out, at least through 2012. So as humiliating as that game was, it's part of our history, and it's part of what got us to where we are today. And it, as I said on a podcast earlier this year, that game doesn't really bother me anymore. The night that it happened, it didn't bother me so much, and it bothered me more and more and more as the Clemson fans poured it on, like they should. I don't blame them, but I'd have done it too. But now that we've won four in a row, now that they lost a game 70-33, just like we lost that one, it doesn't hurt anymore. It doesn't hurt me anymore. And if you're a South Carolina fan out there and it still hurts you, I'd say, you know, put some perspective around it. That game was necessary for our football program to get to where it is today. And it was a painful time, but all has turned out for the good, at least, again, through 2012. So we're going to talk about 2004 next time on Buckshots. I promise we're just going to talk about one season on the next one, but I thank you for indulging me as we talked about the 2002 and 2003 season. As always, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you soon. It's your birthday. We gon' party like it's your birthday. We gon' sip a card like it's your birthday. And you know we don't give a like your birthday. You'll find me in the club, bottle full of bub. Look, mommy, I got the X. I'm getting to taking drugs. I'm in the having sex. I ain't in the making love. So come give me a hug. Get in the getting rough. You can find me in the club, bottle full of bub. Look, mommy, I got the X. I'm in the taking drugs. I'm in the having sex. I ain't in the making love. So come give me a hug. Get in the getting rough. When I pull up out front, you see the Benz on dub. When I roll 20 deep, it's 20 knives in the club. Heard up Dre, now they wanna show me love. When you sound like Eminem, and they wanna. Homie, ain't nothing changed. Hold down, G's up. I see exhibit in the cut. Roll that weed up. If you watch how I move, you mistake before I play up here. Been hit with a few shells, but I don't walk with a limp. In the hood, in the latest, saying 50, you hot. They like me, I want them to love me like they love pop. But holla in New York, and tell you I'm local. When you're playing is to put the rap game in the choke. I'm full of focus, man. My money on my mind. Got a meal out the deal, and I'm still in the grind. Now shorty says she feeling my style, she feeling my flow. A girl from Woody, they buy, and they ready to go. I'm in the club. Bottle full of bub, look mommy, I got the eggs, if you're in the taking drugs, I'm in the having sex, I ain't in the making love, so come give me a hug, if you're in the getting rough, you can find me in the club, bottle full of bub, look mommy, I got the eggs, if you're in the taking drugs, I'm in the having sex, I ain't in the making love, so come give me a hug, if you're in the getting rough. My flow, my show brought me the dough, that brought me all my fancy things, my crib, my cars, my clothes, my shoes, what than you hate you mad. I thought that you'd be happy I made it. I'm that cat by the bar toasting to the good life. You that faggot that trying to pull me back, right? My junk get the bumping in the club, it's on. I'm with my eyes, if she smiles, she gone. Hit the roof on fire, let the motherfucker burn. If they're talking about money, homie, I ain't concerned. I'ma tell you what banks for me, cause go ahead, switch the style up. It's hate to let her make them watch the money pile up. Or we can go upside the head with a bottle of bull. Then the way we be. You can find me in the club, bottle full of bub. Look, mommy, I got the X, if you're in the taking drugs. I'm in the having sex, I ain't in the making love. So come give me a hug, if you're in the getting rough. You can find me in the club, bottle full of bub. Look, mommy, I got the X, if you're in the taking drugs. I'm in the having sex, I ain't in the making love. So come give me a hug, if you're in the getting rough. Don't try to act like you don't know where we be.